Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Back to the old Pacifico we are here, the Phil Hendry Show. Until 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, truth is our bitch. And, you know, do we really have, do we really own the truth? Yeah, I mean, our version of it, whatever that is. It's just, it's very catchy. Welcome to the show, and of course, welcome to our online viewers of Phil TV. We have a live video cast of our show every night. And we also have, as well, a backstage pass available to our video cast viewers, which allows them access to every single solitary piece of audio that we have ever done that we can get our hands on since about 1997. So that's a lot. Now, I was talking to Joel McHale, who's a terrific guy, and during the Bobby Dooley podcast, he says he used to record our show.
Yeah, Joel McHale did?
Yeah, he recorded our show when he came out to L.A., and another guy that recorded our show is Matt Groening. I've mentioned that. Now, if I could get a hold of all the tape that these guys have got, we would have a an amazing, because there's a few months that are missing from the early part of 97. We were just local. Nonetheless, the highest quality audio, the best copies of the shows, original master tapes of the shows are available at philhendryshow.com. So get a backstage pass. It's the best possible value that you could possibly get online. And, you know, I saw an interesting, very, very interesting online clip that somebody sent to me, and it's Harlan Ellison. Do you know who this is?
Well, he's the science fiction writer.
Yeah. Harlan Ellison is not just a science fiction writer. He is a raconteur. He is a social critic. But more than anything else, the guy is very funny to listen to. He's very funny to hear the stories that he has working in Hollywood. Now, Harlan Ellison's a science fiction writer, and was writing short stories. Yes, I belch, bud.
Well, yeah, I just want to point it out.
Is that your job, pointing out when I belch?
Yeah, what is that, bud?
Well,
yeah, just take it easy, okay? If I pointed out everything that you did that was socially untoward or socially unacceptable, we would never, that's all we'd talk about for weeks. Harlan Ellison was a science fiction writer. And gradually, being a successful science fiction writer, he was hired by different entities in Hollywood to write different projects. One of the earliest was Star Trek. Harlan Ellison was the author of a number of episodes of Star Trek, some very, very well known. He didn't mention any, but when I was looking at the biography attached to the clip that I saw, there was a Star Trek. He also authored, and I didn't know this, one of the all-time best Outer Limits episodes ever.
Oh, I can't. Which one is this?
This the one where the bugs from space was convicts?
No. That was a good one. Harlan Ellison authored one of the greatest Outer Limits episodes ever. It was, I don't know what it was called, but it was Robert Culp, the late actor who was in I Spy and a number of films that you'll recognize him from. And Robert Culp plays the last man, I think, on Earth, and he is running to evade capture by an alien entity that has taken over Earth. And what has happened was, this man is the last man on Earth, but he has a glass hand.
Oh, I know this one.
What is it?
Hold on. He has a glass hand. It's a prosthetic hand. He might even be a robot himself, I'm not sure. But on a wire, in this glass hand, imprinted on this wire, is essentially the electric information, somehow imprinted on this wire, is the information for every man, woman, and child on Earth.
And he has every human being on Earth on this wire.
How's that possible?
It's, but just be quiet, you know.
Well, in fact, the electro signature.
Yes, Robert, very good word. The signature, the electronic, the electromagnetic, whatever signature of every human being is on this wire. And so Harlan Ellison authored this, and I remember this to this day as a kid watching this episode. It was fantastic. And the entire episode is this guy, this man, Culp, running, trying to escape from these beings that have taken over Earth, and he has literally in his possession the well-being of every human on the planet. Really, really terrific. So Ellison, this is what he did. And he also was one of the early writers on the first Star Trek movie. And he told a very funny story. He said, Gene Roddenberry said to them, it was not big enough. It's not big enough. Make it bigger. Make it bigger. He says, Gene, we're blowing up the universe. What more do you want? You know. But he was on this clip talking about being a writer. And you got to watch it. I can't play it for you because there's some, you know, profanity and so forth. But he's essentially saying, I got a call today, he said, and it was from some film company in the Valley that wanted to use an interview that was done of me for Babylon 5. Apparently, he also was one of the writers on the original, Babylon 5. And he said, fine, sure, you can use the interview, just pay me. And that began his diatribe as to what happened. When he said, pay me, meaning if you're going to use my image on your film, on your little wraparound or whatever, the promotional film for the Babylon 5, yes, you may use it, but you pay me. And the person on the other end of the phone said, well, a lot of people are doing it for free. He says, everybody else may be stupid, but I'm not. And Ellison's whole point was that writers get screwed, that stuff is used, and they're not paid for that stuff, that their images are used, they're not paid for it. And it was great. It was so good that I posted it on my Facebook page, and it speaks exactly and entirely for me.
And what you're not a writer.
I'm not a writer. I know I'm not a writer.
What you got to do with that?
I'm talking about the stuff that we do on the show, you know, things that I've done, things, my voice, whatever. It's about giving away the work of performers and writers, the people that run the show, the managers, the owners of the companies who just give this stuff away, or they give it away for practically nothing, and you never wind up getting paid for any of it. That's what's going on today. And I got to tell you something. I'm all in favor of amateurs. And when I say amateur, I don't mean that in a denigrating way. I don't mean that in an insulting way. When I just say that non-professionals, I'm all in favor of non-professionals involving themselves in media or whatever the profession is. I mean, I can't really speak for doctors, you know.
Well, I
don't want to see an amateur, you know, but if you want to try it, there's probably some limits to what you're able to do as an amateur in the medical field, you know. But I'm all in favor. You know, you want to make a movie, you want to do a radio show. That's fine. That's fine. But understand what you're doing. You're cheapening the market for professionals that have worked for years. So I would simply say this. I know that you want to have your work seen, and I think that that's admirable, and I think it's necessary, and you should. But you need to hold a line someplace and say, after this point, I get paid. Now, Arianna Huffington made a big thing. You remember this, Margaret?
Well, she didn't want to pay the bloggers.
Yeah. The bloggers said, we'd like to be paid. And she laughed. Essentially, she laughed in their faces and she said, ha 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 ha, I'm giving you promotion. Now, that goes over really well with people that don't know what they're talking about. Anybody that says that, hey, the promotional value of being in an Arianna Huffington, is just one. I don't care who you are, and I don't care how many years you've been writing, and I don't. You don't know your ass from a hole in the ground. You don't know what you're talking about. You may well know that you're even lying, you may know that you're stupid. I don't know. But you don't know what you're talking about. There's no promotional value in it at all. And I don't care how many anecdotal stories somebody's going to tell me about, well, I know a guy that got hired because his...
Well, what do you say to that? If you do know someone that got hired...
I don't care. The percentage of guys getting hired off of some blog they wrote for Arianna Huffington is almost not, it doesn't even register. It's not even on the charts. It just doesn't happen in sufficient numbers to justify saying, hey, I worked for free, but it really helped me eventually get a career. Doesn't happen. Now, there are people that get careers. There are people that get careers by, you know, going for the, you know, getting a job. You know, they send, I don't know, they send their tape in and they get hired. They send their writing in, they get hired. That happens, yeah. But that's a job application.
Yeah, it's free.
Yes. But nobody is using that. No one's using that, putting that in their magazine and saying, you know what, you get promotional value. There's a reason why Arianna Huffington uses all those submissions. If she's laughing at those people and saying, ha, 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 you know, you get great promotional value, then people can turn around and look at her and say, why, by the way, are you using all this work? Why do you publish all of these people that you laugh at who want to be paid? Well, you can say, well, she's saving money. She's saving money. But, I mean, crap, even if it's free, is still crap. So what are you talking about? You're talking about good writing. People read it. It represents a point of view that people want to see. It represents some creativity. It has value, and she's putting it into her magazine, and she's getting it for free, and she's laughing at people who want to be paid. There's something wrong with the picture, and the picture is called, you writers that do it and you guys that give it up for free, you're idiots, you're getting screwed, and you're cheapening it for everybody else. That's all there is to it. And I say the same thing to anybody in my business. If you voice track music for 500 radio stations for Jack Ball Broadcasting Incorporated, the big ass company, and they say to you, hey, why don't you go in the booth and voice track, and we'll use your voice on 500 radio stations, and we'll pay you $250 extra a month. If you settle for that, you have just screwed so many more people than you can possibly think of. You've screwed professionals all over the country. Management in radio, just like in every other business, wants to keep their overhead low, and they want to keep the productivity high. They want to be able to use and make money, and they don't want to have to pay for it, not if they can help it. And radio is no different than any other business. In fact, my business is probably cheaper and more usurious and more, they probably rob people that work for them more than any other business I can think of, the broadcasting business. I know I'm not supposed to say this.
Well, you're saying it, Phil, and you're biting the hand that feeds you.
Wait. What feeds me? You mean I'm biting the hand that starves me? That's what I'm biting. All right, we'll be right back.
Yeah, I'm not starving you, man. You just had to lose 90 pounds.
Yeah, how'd you get all the weight if they're starving? You quit breathing on me, bud. Maybe I made all that money doing something other than this. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Gotta love that popcorn, yo.
You eat a lot of that.
I do eat a lot. I'm sorry, I got my mouth full of popcorn. Popcorn is the popcorn that I eat. 100 calories a bag. It's the Orville Redenbacher. Why do I eat it? Well, because for those of you who just joined the show, or maybe not too long with our show, I lost between March of 2012 and March 19th of 2012 to October 31st of 2012. I lost 80 pounds from 289. Down to 210. So it's about 79 pounds, is that it?
Yeah. No. 79.
79 pounds. 80 pounds. So a lot of things have been happening. And the weight that I lost, which was an enormous amount of weight, I did it by watching calories. I did 2,000 calories a day. I really thought I was doing something special. Now I'm talking to my son, Alex, who's on a diet. He's a weightlifter, and he's a young guy. He's 25 years old. This dude is eating 1,650 calories a day, and I think that's pretty, like, amazing. Then I talked to another friend of mine, female, yes, but nonetheless, she's doing 900 calories.
What?
No, you're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. 900 calories a day.
That is not healthy. I don't think, even for a woman.
Well, you know, she's a small, I don't know if she's a little woman or not. When you say small, you mean thin, or do you mean...
I'm just saying 900 calories a day is not healthy.
How many calories a day do you eat?
Yeah, Margaret, how many calories do you eat? Is it probably 3,000 or...
Bud, shut up. Everybody knows you're trying to be insulting.
I'm going to take you, Bud, and I'm going to show you exactly how they make pretzels at that factory. You remember when you were asking about that?
No.
You were. I'm going to show you how those pretzels are made. The warm ones. The warm ones.
Wow. All right. So in any event.
No, I don't eat a lot, and I probably don't eat much more than a couple of thousand. I was on 1,500 calories a day because I was mirroring Frank's diabetes diet.
I didn't know Frank's diabetic.
Well, it was just a it was a diet situation. It wasn't juvenile, or it wasn't the diabetes you're born with. I don't know what it's called.
Juvenile diabetes?
I think so. I don't know. I don't know why they called it that.
Why did they call it that?
I just said I don't know why.
So Frank's 1,500 a day, and that's what you were doing.
Yes, I was pretty much doing the same. And Jason is a little boy, and he eats whatever he eats. We're not doling out the calories to him.
How much would you say? He's a young kid. He's an athlete, right?
Jason plays sports. Yes.
All right. What would you say he eats? Can you give me a typical?
Jason is a typical young man. I mean, he'll sit down to about 3 or 4 bowls of cereal. Or you know what, I'll tell him, don't eat that many bowls of cereal. Don't. But then he brings out the quart of milk. He'll sit down with a full quart of milk and the box of cereal.
Well, that sounds about right. I guess that's what most guys do, you know.
Yeah, I'll sit down, box of cereal.
Well, what are you sitting down with?
Well, I'm sitting down with a box of cereal.
Well, he'll sit down with a box of the bran. I say to him, you only eat brands... The brands and the what is the
Are you talking like Special K?
Well, and the Count Chocula.
Count Chocula is sugar.
Well, I don't know, but
I'll sit down with a Count Chocula.
Yeah, that's real great.
Yeah, who cares? So.
Well, I do too. I'll sit on Count Chocula or Fruity Pebble.
The Fruity Pebble.
Fruity Pebbles. Okay, whatever. All right. So, and what about for dinner?
He'll have 3 or 4 hamburgers. He'll have 3 or 4 helpings of potatoes au gratin, or the scalloped potatoes that I make that he loves so very much. He'll have 2 or 3 helpings of the cob or cobbler.
Is that cobbler?
Are you asking me what I serve?
Yes.
Then I'm giving it to you the way that I say it. Let me start all over again. He has 3 or 4 hamburgers. He'll have the potatoes au gratin, or the scalloped potatoes, and then he'll possibly have some of the cobbler, peach, or apple. What are you doing, Phil? You're nervous with that paper. Do you need to wipe?
What do you mean peach or apple? Is it cobbler?
I think I said cobbler.
You said apple, cobbler. So, forget it. All right.
Peach cobbler, and then he'll have 3, 4, 5 scoops of ice cream. Why? Why do you ask?
I'm just wondering what he eats.
You're living vicariously, Mr. Henry. You want to have some of that?
Yeah, you're living vicariously through the kid.
Do you want to come over to the house? I'll get you. You can have some of the peach cobbler.
And 3 or 4 or 5 scoops of ice cream, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he'll have the ice cream. He'll have the... Some nights he loves to have the Rocky Road.
That's weird.
Why is that? Don't start with that.
Why is Rocky Road weird?
Because it is reminiscent.
See, he started in on this the other day, and it made me nauseous. He was saying, doesn't it remind you of something? And I said, no, not by a long shot.
I love Rocky Road ice cream.
What?
Man, Rocky Road's bad.
No, you know what? That's good. Fine. Great. If you hate Rocky Road, that means all the more for me, man, because I love Rocky Road ice cream, and I haven't had any in so long.
Well, what do you have for dessert?
I don't have dessert, man. I've been on a freaking diet. Now, when I went went off the diet during the holiday season, I told you guys, I was eating chocolate. I don't know why, but chocolate, I just got into chocolate, you know? I had to have chocolate. Chocolate bars, chocolate candy bars, chocolate Reese's, Hershey's, you know, Three Musketeers, just...
What is that about?
I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea. I love it. And I know I've got an allergy to it, because if I eat enough of that stuff, I got to drop 3 or 4 Advil.
But that's crazy, man. You're going to eat chocolate, then you're going to get your head.
Yeah, your head will blow up, and it'll go, what happened? You go, I love chocolate, and meanwhile, you got a brain tumor.
It's not a brain tumor. It's a tension headache. What happens, if I eat enough chocolate, it goes right into the neck and my shoulders.
What does?
The chocolate.
Well, not literally.
No, not literally. The sugar, the residual of the chocolate, whatever it is that I'm allergic to, goes right to my neck, and I get a headache like you wouldn't believe. I got a headache when I was in Atlanta. I don't know what it was. I had a banana split or something. It had that chocolate syrup on it.
Yeah.
And I ate that. I had the worst headache, man. I had, lasted for a day. I couldn't believe it, man. I was like, I must have eaten a whole bottle of bear aspirin, you know, and then started in on Excedrin. And all of that stuff happens to me, and yet I still love chocolate. What is going on there? I think it's almost like a heroin addiction. All right, we're coming back here with the story of the diamond heist in Belgium when we return to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
What is going on with you that you eat chocolate and then you have a...
I get a headache, like a migraine headache.
What?
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 Phil Hendry.
Joins us here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Don was listening to us here. We're just talking, reminiscing. Actually, not reminiscing, because Dan was discussing confectioners, and then it got into Knott's Berry Farm. And what we were talking about is this chocolate addiction that I had, Don.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. And I want to tell you, Phil, I can remember, I'm not much older than you, but I do remember when the Knott's family owned Knott's Berry Farm.
Right.
And that was down in Buena Park, where our good friend, I know you know Bob Green, I've shopped at Bob's stores, and he and I have done a couple of real estate deals together, which I, you know, I don't mean to bring that up, but it was not very good. But
Wait, you did real estate deals with Bob?
I did, yeah, a couple of real estate deals that fell, that were not too, and Bob, if you're listening, I don't mean anything by that, I just... I suppose what I would say, if Bob is listening, I would say that I expect to get, I shouldn't bring this up on your show.
Yeah, if it's business...
I just expect to get payment at some point. But the point that I wanted to make...
Yeah, if it's business, you should just talk to him.
I will do that. I just thought if he was listening, you know, it would be nice to get some... I don't care how much it is. It could be a dollar, it could be 50 cents. Just my end of the money. But the reason why I'm calling you, Phil...
See, all right, go ahead.
The reason why I'm calling you is... You what? What were you going to say?
I think these are business matters you can keep to yourself.
Absolutely. I'm simply saying that if Mr. Green... Because I'm on the air in Southern California, and I'm going to talk about Buena Park, you know, the Knott's Berry Farm in Buena Park. All right?
All right, and let's just end it there, if you don't mind.
Fine. What I was going to say, so I can't even say that Bob Green...
I would rather... you can say whatever you want, Don. You're a friend.
I appreciate that.
But I would rather that you say it to him directly.
All right. The only one thing I want to say, if you've got any amount, if 50 cents a quarter, Bob, please send it, because I haven't gotten my end of the real estate deal. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay.
Phil, I am one of the, I do remember when the Knott's family owned Knott's Berry Farm, and this is why I wanted to bring this up with you. I have had and I have battled over the course of many years a weight problem like yourself. I don't think I've been quite as successful in battling the weight issue as you have most recently, and my hat's off to you, Phil. I think that's very good.
Thank you.
When my family started going to Buena Park and to Knott's Berry Farm, the Knott's family was owning it, and Mrs. Knott's, old lady Knott's as we called her, she was holding forth in her kitchen. Now, a lot of people may not know this about Knott's Berry Farm, but it started as a place where people would stop to get their preserves, so the Knott's Berry Farm, see? It was a berry farm, so they would get preserves, or they would get apple pies, or they would get cherry pies. And while they waited for the pie... Mrs. Knott served chicken dinners. So that's how the restaurant started.
Okay, so I see. So they would stop and get these cherry pies and berry pies.
Yeah, berry pies, Knott's Berry Farm, and she would make chicken dinners. Well, as they waited for the chicken dinners, old man Knott, Mr. Knott.
Do you remember what their names were?
Yeah, Mr. Knott was, I'm going to say, I want to say that his name was Hal or... Ned, and I want to say that Mrs. Knott's was Shirley or Betty, I don't know.
Sure. So we don't know, huh?
No, I think her name was, well, her name was, you know, Mrs. Knotts. It was a joke, but and we all knew her as Old Lady Knotts, and we knew him as Old, sometimes we knew him as Old Lady Knotts, only as, you know, as a joke, but he was Old Man Knotts. And the Old Lady Knotts part, Phil, for Old Man Knotts, was there were some whispers, and I don't think they were true at all, but you know the 50s in America and how prejudiced things were, there were some whispers about Mr. Knotts, and so they would say, oh, there goes Old Lady Knotts number two.
Whispers about what?
Well, I think you can imagine.
Well, are you talking about cross-dressing? Or?
No, not cross-dressing. No, I'm saying old lady. Use your imagination for...
Gay.
I would think so.
Well, we don't know that that's true, folks.
No, we don't know if it's true, but... Okay.
Yeah, we don't know that it's true. So getting to the part of Old Lady Knotts, as you call her...
I call her that. I think everybody called her Old Lady Knotts.
What was her name?
I don't know. Betty or Jean or something. Mary? I don't know. You know, take your pick. It was the 1950s. What kind of a name do you think they had back then? Betty Sue, Mary Lou, Peggy Doo, Boo Boo Boo. I don't know.
Well, but she was born in the 19th century, so her name wouldn't be Peggy Sue.
Well, then what would it be?
Well, it could be Matilda or something 19th century-esque.
All right. 19th century. Jane? Calamity Jane? I don't know. It could have been Gertrude or whatever you want to call it. So Old Lady Knotts would make these pies. Now, I can remember sitting and waiting for a Knott's Berry Farm pie. That's how good they were. You would sit and you'd wait. And they'd say, well, do you want to have a chicken dinner? I'd say, no, thank you. Do you want to take a ride on the mule team? Because by that point, Old Man Knotts had the mule team and he had the...
Didn't they have Panning for Gold?
Yeah, Panning for Gold. They had, and they had the ghost town.
Okay. And he built these things as amusements for people who were waiting for their chicken dinners and their...
Yeah, and their pies, their berry pies. And then, of course, things got a little dicey there when the big business was pie, and now you have an old west town, and one of the things is a saloon, and there was a church group that had some problem... with the idea that maybe Knott's Berry Farm was simulating a brothel.
Right, just because they had pie?
Yeah, I don't really want to go down that road.
Okay, let's not talk about that, okay?
Right, so in any event, I'm sitting there, and I would wait for these pies, and they sometimes took all day, and you would wait, and you'd wait, and you'd wait, and the old man, Knotts, would say, do you want to go get a chicken dinner? And I'd say no. And
maybe go get one. You're standing right there.
Well, you know what I mean. You want to come in for a chicken dinner? I'd say no. I don't want a chicken dinner. By this point, Phil, I was 19 years old. I already am very large, and I tend to carry a lot of weight in my butt and in my hips. So I started, and it's unfortunate, but as a young man, I looked a lot like a woman. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I don't.
No, you don't. Well.
You mean the way you carried the weight?
You had a lot of weight on your butt?
Yes, I had almost a woman's butt. And that got a lot of insult from a lot of these truck drivers that would stop and dump off supplies for the pie making. Now,
this story is, you know...
You're telling me it's weird? I lived it. So I'm down there at Knott's Berry Farm with a big rear end. I'm sorry, I had to cough.
Uh-huh.
Well, I can stop the story if you want.
No, go ahead. I mean, but I'll tell you, it's a lot longer than I thought it would be.
Oh, well, I'm so sorry to bore you.
No, you're not boring me. You're not boring me at all, Don. I thought you were going to tell me about Old Lady Knotts, as you called her, making the pies.
Yes, am I telling you about a pie or am I not?
You're talking about a brothel.
I got sidetracked, all right? I'm sorry. So I'm waiting for these pies. The reason why my rear end got big is because of the pie. And then I'm sitting on it waiting for another pie. It got to a point in that summer, and I'll never forget that. I call it that summer of 1963, when I sat and I waited chicken dinners. I must have eaten, I don't know, how many days are in a summer? How many days are in, it was almost like a romantic summer, only I didn't have a woman. I had pies and a chicken and bones on a plate. But it was romantic. So finally...
Following this story is very confusing. What are you trying to say?
I'm trying to say that old lady Knott's made good pies, I guess.
Okay, well, you could have said that, you know, without getting into a whole thing about how, you know, the summer of 64... And
well, did you want to hear the story or didn't you?
Well, what's the upshot of the story? Okay, that's a clean sweep.
That's it. Every single guest tonight.
Clean sweep. Hey! Every guest tonight is hung up on us.
Yeah, but you were kind of rude to him.
No, I was not. No, I wasn't rude to him.
I don't think he was rude.
Well, he's talking about...
Hey, Robert, the host of the show said...
Why don't you shut up, man?
Well, hold on.
Every time he was talking about pie, you were saying, hey, it's weird, you know.
No, I didn't, Robert. I said, the only thing I said was, when are you going to get to the point?
He was getting to the point, man. You didn't let him finish.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I kept saying to him, oh, well, you know. And he's getting sidetracked about a whorehouse. He got sidetracked about his ass. He got about the freaking truck drivers who dumped off the pie-making stuff.
Well, see, that's the insulting part right there.
I didn't say it. He did. Then he says to me, some other jazz, I forget what. And I said, okay, get to the point. What? Well, that she makes great pies. Well, no kidding, man. We know that old lady not. And that was another thing. What's her name? Judy Susie. Oh, man.
Well, I think, Phil, when you laugh at people, though, it really hurts them.
Well, Margaret, I've got only one thing to say. Then they shouldn't come on the show, because I got more weird asses that come on here with the weird stuff that they say, and you're telling me I can't laugh? You got to be kidding. I've heard you guys laughing at stuff.
We laugh at you, and I think that's acceptable because you're the host of the show.
Yeah, and you need deflating, like Ms. Gray said.
Yes, you need deflating.
Oh, I need deflating. Oh, okay. Well, you know, that's all right. I won't begrudge you that, but I will tell you.
Yeah, you do. You always tell me don't laugh.
No, but I'm always telling you, don't go, yeah, I'm telling you, don't do that.
Yeah, that drives everybody crazy.
I'm not talking to you.
Okay, we're done talking about this. We're going to take a break. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And I still haven't talked about the damn Belgian diamond heist, so we're going to do that when we come back. I swear, or know the reason why. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Am I back on yet? Hello, am I back on? So yes, my ass got big.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And don't forget, after the show, you can go over to philhenryshow.com, check our program log. We have a show log every single show. We post there for you what was heard and what wasn't and what could have been. It's right there in our show log. And you'll also be able to check other news that's breaking here from the Phil Henry Show. And as I say, as we've been able to present to you now over the last couple of weeks, the streaming for your Apple and other devices, your iOS stream, as we like to call it. We are going to begin to expand our efforts out into other areas of the website promotionally now. There's nothing having to do with maintenance, nothing having to do with development. We've got our website where we want it to be right now. We have to obviously add a lot of our show logs again, but there's going to be a lot of fun things that we're going to involve you guys in over there at philhenryshow.com. All right, dig this. The Belgian job is what the police are calling it. Armed robbers snatch 32 million pounds worth of diamonds in just 3 minutes in a daring Brussels airport heist. 32 million pounds, probably in the neighborhood of $50 million. Maybe more, 60. Eight men cut a hole in a security fence and burst through in fake police cars. Gang, armed with machine guns, seized gems without firing a shot. The robbers sped off through the same gap in the fence just a few minutes later. It is thought the stones belong to diamond and gold traders in Antwerp, which is in Holland. And Holland and the Dutch themselves known for centuries as diamond and gem traders. In fact, if you go to the Dutch Antilles in the Caribbean, people go down there for vacation. People go down there. They get off on cruise ships. They want to go into the Dutch Antilles because that's where they get the deals on, you know, diamonds.
Well, you can get wristwatches and things like that. But the Dutch are they drive a hard bargain, and I love the Dutch, but when I go diamond hunting or I go gem shopping and I visit any Dutch person, I've gotten to the point, Phil, it's really funny. You remember Vandy Camp's, the old coffee shop?
Vandy Camp's was kind of like a Dutch theme.
Yeah, Dutch theme. I hated going in there. And there wasn't one person in there was really Dutch. But they had a windmill. You remember the windmill?
Yeah, I remember the windmill on that Denny's.
That windmill on that Denny's is a windmill from when it was a Vandy Camp's. So you hate the Dutch.
I don't hate them, but I've got a physical revulsion of the way they drive a hard bargain. So if I were to go into, or in Solvang, which is everything is Dutch in Solvang, and I'm suspicious of anyone in Solvang. I'm suspicious of even the place where they have the cream puff. I'm suspicious of all of them.
Because they're Dutch.
Because they, I don't know if they really are.
Well, in any event, the plane waiting to take off was, listen to this story. The plane waiting to take off was filled with passengers and had 32 million pounds worth of diamonds in the hold. 3 minutes later, the gems were gone. All the time it needed for a gang of robbers armed with machine guns to force their way in, seize them, and escape. Not a shot was fired. The passengers were apparently unaware of the drama until their flight was canceled minutes later. It was a smash and grab. Armed robbers stealing diamonds worth more than $32 million. There was found later on the charred remains of a van suspected to have been involved in the heist. It was found by police minutes after this heist was reported. Security staff placed barriers along a safety fence where the armed robbers were believed to have burst through before making a beeline for the diamonds as they were being loaded onto the plane. And so they busted through this fence. Security came in too little, too late.
Did they? And no one was hurt?
No one was hurt. The daring heist was carried out at Brussels Airport when eight masked robbers wearing police uniforms broke through a security fence and drove onto the tarmac unchallenged in two cars with blue flashing lights. Once inside the hold, they quickly located the 120 parcels of diamonds kept in a sealed container no bigger than a shoebox. Now, so this is inside information. They knew exactly what they were looking for. They knew exactly what was going to be on that plane. They knew exactly when it was going to be on that plane. They knew exactly what, you know.
Well, they had some intel, as they call it.
Yeah, they probably had intel.
Yeah, that's what, we already said that, man.
No, we didn't. Ms. Gray did.
Okay. And one of the great ruses of all time, I mean, how many times has it worked when you dress like a cop? You know.
Well, no comment. I've dressed like a cop a few times, but that's been in the privacy of my home.
Yeah, that's fine, Margaret.
Yeah.
Oh, does it make you sick?
We'd rather not hear about it.
Yeah, tell us about you dressed as a cop. What'd you do, beat up Frank's bare buttocal area?
You dirty...
All right, hey. Will you shut up? Buttocal area.
That she's talking about.
No, I did not say that.
Hold on. The daring heist was carried out... Boy, that's... To me, that's these guys... What a pair they got, man. They come busting through in cop cars... And they can, you know, let's see what else. And once inside, they made off with it. That's all the news that we have. An airport spokesman said the robbers made a hole in the perimeter fence and drove up to the Swiss passenger plane, which was ready to leave while wearing outfits that resembled police uniforms. The gang threatened staff. And they seized two locked metal trunks containing the valuables as they were being loaded onto a Helvetic Airlines flight to Zurich at around 8 p.m. on Monday night. The gang's remarkable efficiency led to speculation last night that it could have been an inside job. Gee, do you think?
Well, now, why do you think it's inside?
Well, I mean, maybe not inside, because you can have this information. You can know where it is.
Yeah, what about the Lufthansa job that Henry Hill done?
Yeah.
Well, now, there's a good example. The Lufthansa job, as it was illustrated in Goodfellas, that's an actual robbery that took place. It was the largest heist in American history up to that point. And it was inside. They had the help of a guard that worked there. And then it was the gang that came in, the crew that Henry Hill was with, whoever the hell these guys were.
Well, they weren't. These were It was Jimmy, what's his face?
Right. It was, they were associates of a, not a Gambino, Lucchese. I don't know who the hell it was. Anyway, how about that? Then they made a high-speed exit through the same hole in the fence. Because many of the diamonds were uncut, the chances of recovering them are said to be very low. They had been transported from Antwerp, where 8 in 10 of the world's rough diamonds are processed. 8 of 10. So the Dutch are obviously the people to go see, huh?
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, I love the Dutch when I'm buying diamonds at a good price. But if I've taken it in the you-know-what, I can't go near a windmill. I just... Oh.
How about wooden shoes?
Don't make a joke out of it, Phil.
Well, I can't go near a windmill.
I can't.
The gang used two black cars in their raid, grabbed the cache of stones, and sped off into the darkness. Wow, man. This is a movie, huh, bud?
Yeah, I'd make a movie out of that. That's perfect.
A truck from the security company Brinks is seen at the airport's cargo scene at the... Wow. They were also... Belgium was the scene of a $100 million diamond heist 10 years ago. A $100 million diamond heist. All right, guys, the Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Hendry. And be sure to join us online at Phil Hendry Show for all of the marvelous stuff that we have for you at philhendryshow.com. Love you. Can't live without you. And don't forget, folks, until tonight at 10 Pacific, 1 a.m. tomorrow morning Eastern, let that be a lesson to you. Good night, Wally.
Phil Hendry.